In a moment, you'll meet Jesse Tyler's three guests who are employee owners at the Alliance Group, which is New England's most trusted mechanical contractor for heating and air conditioning repair, service, and installation. Jesse's goal is to talk to frontline employee owners, and these are the owners that don't necessarily have access to the best audio technology at work. So there are a few spots where the audio is not as good as we'd like, but I hope you'll agree that the message that is conveyed more than compensates for the audio quality. Enjoy this episode.
Welcome to the Owner to Owner podcast with your host, Jesse Tyler, part of the EO Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Owner to Owner podcast. It's great to have you with us again. I'm Jesse Tyler. I work at Hypertherm Associates, a 54-year-old global manufacturing and technology company that is almost 2,000 global owners strong. I do a lot of work around employee experience and engagement, focus groups, onboarding, and celebrations, milestones, and storytelling. I do think work on decision-making forums like Problem Busters and other ownership culture. I absolutely love employee ownership, and I'm fascinated by the culture and the voices of the culture. The goal of the Owner to Owner podcast is to have discussions about a range of ownership experiences and culture topics to bring more insight and more voices to the individual ownership experience so that our listeners hear their peers in ownership, in manufacturing, in supply, and support, all of those different roles that you don't usually get to hear. And a stretch goal of this project is that an owner considering selling their company will hear this, and you'll remind them of some of the workers that work for them now and maybe help gain another ESOP in the world versus selling out to things less secure. This podcast grew out of a friendship with Brett Kiesling, who does a lot nationally to amplify employee ownership and the power. My main driver and why I do this is I've seen how, with dear friends I've had for over a decade, I've seen how essential workers, the folks that are often left out of wealth building and job quality and security, are equally included. I think of my parents that would have had a completely different financial experience if they had worked at an ESOP versus what their experiences were. And I think of friends when the economy got hard in the Great Recession that all were critical to their business, but they were the first ones to get shed when they started the layoffs. And while I love all ownership, I love the folks that work and do like yourselves. And that's why I was excited to have you come on as voices of ownership. So if we could have you guys introduce yourselves, starting with Sean, just your name, your title, a little bit about what you do. It's always interesting to hear. The title doesn't always give away what's the daily work. So a little bit of insight and a little bit of insight about Alliance Group would be awesome. Sean?
Yeah, my name, I'm Sean Hurley. I'm a branch manager out here in our West Lebanon office. What I do is I estimate jobs, I design jobs, I run jobs from anywhere from a simple change out to a design build project. I've been with the company since day one, back in April 2010.
That's great.
We started off with 9 employees, and now we're up to about 150.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's a legacy holder.
Yeah, there was four members out in the field, 5 in the office. Haven't looked back since.
That's great. That's great. Matt, please introduce yourself and what you do.
My name is Matt Johnson, service field manager. My title, we all wear many hats at Alliance. I oversee the service department, but like Sean, I sell work. I manage jobs, customer relations, invoice complaints, scheduling, vehicle maintenances, the scheduling, continuing education for technicians. When push comes to shove, go out in the field and get my hands dirty again like I did for years. Just like I said, we wear many hats. We do what needs to be done. I've been here, came aboard kind of early 2013. They had Sean and another guy down south, and that was it. My twin brother works for Alliance out of our Essex office. He got hired. They found out he had a brother that was in the field, and they said we need to get somebody on him to hire him. So met with Sean Hurley and the owner, JP, and was hired like a month after my brother.
That's great. Great. Due to a tight schedule, we have Brandon with us for about 10 minutes. So I want to hear from Brandon, and then we're going to throw a couple of questions to you predominantly to make use of our brief time together so we can hear your voice and your story. Could you introduce yourself, please, Brandon?
Yep. My name is Brandon Catledge. I'm a service tech. I basically go out and we work on heating, AC, refrigeration, ventilation, pretty much everything when it comes to trades. I've been here almost 9 years now. We've only been an ESOP for, 3 years now?
2018.
But I feel like nothing really changed because this company has always been a good company to work for. We've always worked as a team. Like I said, we wear many hats. When someone needs help, it's not my job. It is my job.
Yeah.
A great place
that's
to work.
Awesome.
Yeah, family comes first. Good place to work.
That's great. And I appreciate your intros and your openness and sharing a little bit more about yourself. So you've just already validated the point of the podcast project, where if somebody doesn't know anything about employee ownership and they just heard your intros, three of you, sounds like it's your business. You own it, you run it, you do whatever it takes, hands dirty to beyond. So I appreciate that. So that's why I'm smiling and laughing in your responses. It's a warm response. I just want to affirm that since we just met on this conversation. So I want to hear a little bit more, if we could, with what you said, Brandon, about you can't say it's not my job. Tell a little bit more, or maybe share an example so we can get some insight with our time with you.
I'm not a plumber, but if a plumber needs help and I'm open, then I'm going to go help them. So
that's great.
Yeah. So basically, we pretty much do anything we have to do. We work as a team.
That's great. Yeah. It's something that's come up at conferences. It's come up on this podcast and prior ones is, what do you do when you want your voice to matter and suddenly it does? Whoa, what does that mean? And then where are the boundaries of that? If nobody involved can say, nope, talk to the aunt, not my problem, that you can't shirk it. It's a very different way of working when there isn't that clear boundary, but you all still have your performance goals and you have your customer urgency and everything else. So any insights on that are really welcome.
And so Brandon didn't mention this, but he's actually transitioning roles and evolving into my role as the service manager, and I'm going to kind of be more sales. So he's actually elevating out of the field, like Don and I did, because
that's
the
great.
Majority of our managers are, we're entry level, but we're elevated.
That's awesome.
Just about every manager here was a field employee.
Yeah, different connection to the customer, walk the walk, understand. I've joked about it in the past where it's very different if your managers have been with the customers. They know which door to go in, which way they park their truck forward or backward into the space, how things flow. When they say, I'll get back to you soon, what they're actually expecting. And that can be great. And to hear the career progression for all three of you is fantastic. People are seeking out security. They want to have employers that develop them and give them room. Headroom to develop, and you already have shared that with Alliance Group, which is fantastic. So I usually finish the podcast with this question, but with Brandon's schedule, I'm going to start for all three of you. Brandon first, so you can make your appointment. What was your EO aha moment?
That's that one.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've ever had that. Maybe, I guess if I had to choose one, it'd probably be, so we get a performance bonus check quarterly. And the first time it wasn't that great. The second time it was way better because people were actually doing what they're supposed to be doing, like taking parts back to the supply house if you don't need them, instead of throwing them in your van and never using them, just thinking more like an owner. Like you don't actually own the company, but if you did, you need to think like an owner, spend your money wisely.
That's great. And so last question for you with schedule, and then I'm going to move to Sean and Matt for the same questions. What does ownership mean to you? It's the big, broad, wide question, and you can drive on through with what feels right. You describe it. What does ownership mean to you?
Working together and making people better at their job because we'll all do good in the company. If you do good, then we'll all do good. So training others, if they're struggling, make them better. Because
that's
in the
great.
Long run, if everyone does good, then we all do good.
That's great. So you used we like, I think, 6 or 7 times in our brief conversation so far. Can you say I? Can you say, or for me, ownership means as an individual to you or to your family and your wealth building and your experience? What does ownership mean to you as an individual?
Security.
Great. It's to be fair to you, because we just met, there's often a long pause when I ask employee owners because they have a hard time answering just as an individual, because the most common word in ownership seems to be we, team, the company, and the share. So I appreciate, I've grilled you a little bit. I appreciate you playing along with the limited time that we had. And if we don't connect again in the conversation, I appreciate you dropping in and lending your voice. Really appreciate it. Let's work our way across the crowd here. Matt, have you had an EO aha moment? So it's not the sort of this is neat, but that moment that you can look back on and say, okay, this is going to be a game changer for me or my family. Do you have a moment like that? And if so, could you share it?
Yeah, I do service meetings and with my team, and one of the guy, we were having a meeting, and this was shortly after it was before COVID, because we're still having meetings back then on a monthly basis. But basically the meeting evolved and a lot of guys were just talking about, hey, this benefits all of us. So the more we do, the better we are, the better it's going to be for all of us. And it just, you know, they were saying things like Brandon said, we're going to bring back parts. We're going to make sure that we're finishing this job up on time, not letting it linger to another day. And it was just kind of everyone in the group had the same mindset. And it was like, wow, this could be something huge for us. It could help take us to the next level, set us apart from other companies, because the biggest struggle within this industry right now is manpower. In any way that we can differentiate ourselves from another company is a win for us, where the potential to attract new employees and new owners.
That's great. Yeah, I'll bring us back to that because I wanted to ask you about it. So I appreciate you bringing it up. Just you're specialists in a critical industry and there aren't enough of you. So I wanted to bring that back as an open question about how you're able as a team, as co-owners, to navigate a very difficult hiring environment for the specialists and expertise that you need. I'm going to ask that second question that I just asked to Brandon. So the big question in the EO space is, what does ownership mean to you?
I look at it as you care more about something. There's more thought and care behind it. That, to me, that's what it is. It's a job, but it's more than a job, right? It's part of my life. And it's the difference between owning and renting a house, right? It's your house. So you're taking that extra time to fix something or to do something right with it. Just like at work. Hey, this is ours. We're all part of it. I'm gonna go that extra mile to make sure that it's being done right, and that we're working towards a common goal, and you have putting my best foot forward and really putting everyone else well, right? That's what the hope is. So to me, that's what it means, is there's more care to it.
That's great. Thanks for the insights. Sean, what are your thoughts? EO aha moment. Do you have one you can share?
So I guess for me, it would be, so we have an ESOP communication committee, right? And for me, I guess it wasn't just for managers. Like a lot of companies, that's what everything's managers, everybody makes those decisions. But the communication committee, I think might have been first or second committee that we opened up to everybody. And then the amount of people that actually wanted to be on that committee outside of the management group, I thought was great. And it's
great.
It shows that these individuals are taking it seriously as well.
That's great. So that's sort of your aha moment. And then I'm going to try, it's a fun struggle, but it is a little bit of a struggle as the interviewer. I'm going to try for the same thing for you, is what does ownership mean for you? And I'm hoping you can say, for me, my family, it's okay if you say we in your company, but I'm just curious from an individual voice, what does ownership mean to you?
Actually, ownership is exactly that, but not in a business sense, more of an ownership of yourself and your responsibility. And how my individual responsibilities can affect everybody else, not just for their day-to-day, but for their future. If I'm not taking my responsibilities seriously, it can greatly affect everybody else. And that's what it means to me.
That's great. Brandon, do you have time for one quick question before I head out? We'd love to hear how they talk about employee ownership when you're around people who don't know anything about it. If you're out in the community and somebody sees your big view, beautiful Alliance, 100% employee owned and operated logo, and they say, hey, dude, what's the deal with ownership? How do you talk about it with somebody who has not had any exposure to it yet?
Well, honestly, I've never really had that happen. This is still new, but when it first happened, when I was telling my family about it, was basically, I have a share in the company now, so the better the company does, the better I will do in the long run in my future.
That's great.
It's really, I'm still trying to understand the whole thing. So it's hard to explain to people because they're just like, oh, so you own the company? No, it's not. I don't own the company. It's hard to explain.
It is. And I appreciate your being open about that, because if it helps at all for context, I've been at this for 15 years and I've talked to literally thousands of people about ownership. I've onboarded over 1,000 associates over the years. I welcomed them to the company, tried to get them up to speed with culture, ownership, products, mission, values. And what I would say, if I had a one line on a form, I would say that if it goes well on the first day when we started an employee-owned company, it feels different and it feels good. But then it's probably 3 to 4 years until we can very fluently, comfortably, and confidently talk about it, both from the complications of an ESOP plan and in the mechanics, but also you can't tell somebody culture. You have to support them to have an experience and then ask them about culture and then maybe fill in some things on learning. So I would say safely, I try to set the expectation with new hires. And when I talk to other ESOPs, I think you feel it day one, you can describe it comfortably 3 to 4 years down. Does that sound fair?
Yep.
And that's part of the fun of it. And that's part of the point of the podcast is that we talked to Web Industries and we had two of the guests had been there 28 years and one of them had been there, I think, 2 years. And it was very interesting to hear the different perspectives. But then even after a couple of years, it was a little hard to tell who was two and who was 28. But you could see that learning and discovery. So that, again, I really appreciate your thoughts on that. And so, Matt, how do you take care, Brendan? Appreciate you dropping in.
Yeah.
I'll see you again another day. I'll see you to one of the Vermont conferences or New England conferences. Take care. Thanks. Matt, how do you talk about employee ownership when you're around people who've had no exposure? And then the second part of the question is, it is slightly different. How do you talk about it with friends and family? So first, you're out on a job site and somebody says, what is the deal with your logo? What does that mean to be employee owned? What do you say? How do you share that?
Yeah, so I mean, it actually does come up quite a bit in my position interviewing new hires. They come in the door, we sit down for an interview and they say, or I'll even ask them, we're an employee owned company. Do you know what that means? 9 times out of 10, they say, or I say, do you know what an ESOP is? Basically, I describe it as I say, we all pretty much have shares within the company. We all work and the company is made up of shares that we all own. So we all own part of the company. And the better the company does, the better we do in the long run. So, you know, kind of drive it home that it's more than just a job, right? There's a bigger picture in mind here where if you want to come here and just have a job and go through the motions, it's probably not the company for you. But if you care about what you do and you are one of the ones that want to go the extra mile, you're going to do great here. And it works both ways. It's a two-way street here. We look for that and we encourage that, but then we reward that, as evident with Brandon and elevating him. And we have an owner performance bonus. So that's how I explain it. I don't know if that makes sense, but.
Oh, you absolutely nailed it. I just think that's fantastic. I think somebody listening who's sort of ownership curious and shared a few things, I think, again, this is why we do this project, because you're incredibly well-spoken and insightful, and I think it's great. So let's go to, before we go to your family, I want to ask a follow-on question. So you mentioned you got to be a bit of a go-getter. Can you work at an ESOP? Can you work at Alliance if you just want to come in, do a good job, and go home? You're not into all this culture stuff. Does that work or not? I'm asking you a hard question, but you clearly are ready and can handle it. It's sort of a closed question of a yes or no. Can somebody just punch in, do good work and go home, but not get into all this, as I heard to referred by somebody as this culture stuff?
Wow, that is a tough one. I think long run, no. I mean, we've seen it. I think short term, yes, you can come here and just do it, but you don't last. I mean, so basically, no. I mean, yeah, it's a short period of time, but those people kind of self-select out. It doesn't work. And we've seen that since the inception of this. And kind of how Brandon alluded to in the beginning, you know, we've kind of been like this culture for a while. So we've had these people that have come through the doors that don't last. And so I don't think if you aren't of that, then you're not going to last. This isn't the right match. And that's okay. There's plenty of companies out there and we need help. Yes, we do. But we also are trying to promote a culture that we want.
That's great. Yeah. Thanks for the insights. Employee-owned companies are great to work at, but that doesn't mean that they're easy to work at. Everyone's voice matters, and we push each other, sort of horizontal leadership, again, from one of the web participants in the podcast. There's a different peer pressure. There's a peer pressure for good, and it's hard if you just want to punch in and punch out. And I think that you said it well. People inevitably get on board or self-select out. So let's get you back on track. So you're talking about ownership with family. And since you've had a little more experience in it than Brandon did, the other way you could describe it is, how would your family describe you talking about ownership? So give a little bit of insight when you bring ownership home, what that sounds like a little bit.
I guess, so basically how my family would look at it is, this is like my boys, I have three boys. This is dad's company. This is, that's dad's work truck. It's not Alliance's work truck. It's my work truck. It's like, you know, and a couple of them said, hey, when I get older, I want to go work with dad at his company. They see me as if I almost had my, they talk about it as if I had my own two-man plumbing and heating show, and I'm the boss out there. I'm doing everything. That's how they see me working at Alliance, as it's he's there working and it's his thing and he's got all this stuff going on, because that's what it is. That's what it takes.
That's great. Thank you. That's what we're looking for. Sean, when you are out in the world and talking ownership, or somebody sees your logo at a job site and asks you what that really means, what's that like? How do you share it with them? How do you describe it?
I explain to them what it is. It's a form of retirement fund that you have a direct responsibility. You and your others that you work with have that. You have more control over how you're going to do than anybody else. You're not blindly giving money to somebody else and say, hey, invest this for me, contributing to help to our own success and our own future. I also explained to him, I said, and the great thing about an ESOP too is that it promotes commitment and longevity. You know, it's not something, you're not walking in and 6 months later, you're not a millionaire. This is something that takes a commitment, and if you're committed to this, in the long run, it's going to pay off for you.
Yeah, it's definitely the long game when it comes to the wealth and the equity building, for sure. You said that. Thank you. And then bringing it home, family. How do you talk about it, or how would they describe you talking about ownership?
I think I talk to everybody about it being pretty much the same way. This is what it is. My children are older. They're 22, 20, and 16. So conversations are maybe too far between right now.
Yeah.
But I do. I explain it the same way. And they also, in that age, they don't understand what I mean for it, because they're not thinking about retirement, obviously.
Yeah. It helps at all with a similar age child. We have a 17-year-old, Ben, and he went and got an early job. It was real quick, got it at the pizza place, had an absolutely insufferable, miserable experience, and learned to ask more questions and to get a sense of culture. And then he now works for a great marine company, and they're teaching him how to fix boats and engines and rebuild and detail. And the owner is who hired him is coaching him, and he's having the time of his life. I don't think he knows it's work. And it's just funny, within two jobs, how quickly he got a sense of the difference of an ownership culture, even if this is just on the scale of a family, you know, thriving family business, the Osborne Marine that he works for. So I appreciate that. And that's why I'm poking and prodding a little bit, because the language that you're using, for listeners that are not as far along in their experience and their confidence with it, you're giving them examples that they can use when they talk about it. And that's part of the gift of the dialogue around culture, ownership culture. You can get the black and white and the clarity of the ESOP. It takes folks a while generally, because it is a little bit more complicated and different, but at least there's like a rule book and there's a guideline. When you get to the culture, it takes a while to get the handle of talking on it. And I think you have both given, and Brandon, before he left, gave some nice insights. So I want to constrain you a little bit of fun here. Three words, coming back to Matt. If you could only use three words to describe ownership, what would you choose for three words? And then you can add color as to why.
Big pride has to be one of them. Caring, and it's hard to use a word. You almost want to use a sentence, because sometimes a word can be overwhelming, right?
Go ahead with a sentence. We're driving at a deeper understanding. Go ahead and play with it a little bit.
So it's just your pride and caring and heart. Like, you put more into it. It's just when you own something, there's a greater respect for it than if you didn't, you know, you weren't part in it or didn't have ownership in it. It's especially if you're somebody like myself, and I know Sean, who came from, who was raised where you had to work for everything. Nothing was ever given. So when you own something, that was hard work. That wasn't just given to you. Like, you talking about your son with his job, like getting a job and getting money to go out and buy stuff rather than somebody buy it for you. You have so much more respect for that item, whatever it is. If my first car was 93 Dodge Spirit, there was nothing special about that car to anyone else, baby blue, but it was great to me because I bought it, you know, and I had a job and I was able to get it, and I split it with my twin brother, but it gave us a means of conveyance and it was awesome. But, and we owned it. So to me, it's just, it's a deeper feeling almost.
That's great. Thank you for that. That's great about the car and the idea of true ownership. You bought it, and doesn't matter how anyone else looks at it, other than you and your brother. If you mention that to him after this conversation, What are the odds that he won't have an enormous toothy grin down memory lane? Sean, what about for you? Three words or an attempt at three words and just let it roll?
No, I agree with Matt. Obviously, pride, responsibility, and team. And now I'll use, Brandon mentioned it before, and one thing that we've done here at Alliance, the manager group, we've gone and done a lot of training with our working to develop our culture here. And we went through quite a few trainings with a gentleman, Steve Thomas. And one of the things, and he's a football guy, so he made perfect analogies of it that we could relate to. And one of them is, you're an offensive lineman, you don't ever touch the ball, right? You don't touch the ball. Running backs, your quarterback, they touch the ball. But when somebody fumbles the ball, you jump on the ball, right? No matter what your job is, that need comes up, you fill that need. And I feel like we do that. Brandon touched on, we do that. It's not all, that's not my job. That's not what I do. We have a greater responsibility to take care of our customers, because that's our responsibility, to keep our customers happy. And if somebody needs a hand, whether anything about what they're doing, if they need a hand, you're going to go give them a hand.
That's great. I like the analogy with the offensive line, because if you think of whether listeners are big fans of football or not, you will never see a bigger celebration by any level of a football team than when a lineman scoops it up and lumbers in. There's the great passers and the great receivers never get the same celebration that a lumbering line who's on the ball gets. I like the analogy. I want to go back to something Matt had brought up earlier. Can you share a little bit more about the hiring and dealing with the staffing and the pressure? It's good to talk about the culture. It's great to hear your insights and the positives, but I think part of ownership is that a lot of the day is hard. And for a lot of companies, manufacturing, your business partner of ours, so for full disclosure for our listeners, there's nothing like ESOPs hiring ESOPs and Alliance helping Hypertherm go. It's a beautiful thing. But hiring is absolutely brutal. Nationwide, I know there's a problem, but in New England, we have some pockets that have been deemed the hardest to hire in the country right now. How are you doing with all of the responsibility you have to keep businesses going and 24-hour access and everything? Talk a little bit more about what you're experiencing to the extent that you can. And I'd love to know how you feel ownership, being an employee-owned company, if it's an advantage in hiring or not. Matt, you want to start?
Yeah, it is difficult. Basically, we've adapted to growing our own talent. We go out and we look for, you might not necessarily know how to do the work or the job, but if you have a good attitude, show up every day, you're willing to work hard, we'll train you. Send you to school. We'll have you work with guys. We'll get you where you need to be, as long as you can provide us with those basic things. We do hire people with experience, but those are unicorns right now.
Yeah.
It's just so hard to find those people. So we started this several years ago. We saw this coming, knowing that the average age of plumber or HVAC worker was getting into their mid to late 50s, we saw this coming. So we just started doing that and then growing our own talent. And it's worked out really well. And a lot of the guys that we bring aboard aren't guys that we find on the street. They're referrals. They're somebody saying, hey, I have this buddy I know. He's a hard worker. He doesn't know anything about HVAC, but he's a hard worker. Perfect. That's what we're looking for. We've been doing that and we've had some really good success with it. And that's helped us grow from 10 to 150 in 12 years. And then obviously we do get other people that come aboard with experience, but those are hard to come by.
Yeah, there are literally fewer of them in the pool to invite or to pick from, for sure. That's interesting on the upper 50s, because with us in the steel industry, there was a lot of talk about how the average age of the welder a couple years ago was like 58 or 59, and the pipeline wasn't full. And then you look at anybody trying to hire a plumber right now, trying to hire an electrician, and the queue is so long that it's just hard to believe. So I think it's interesting. So what I got out is, you kind of proactively, when the trouble started with hiring, you really started to develop internally. You find the right culture ad, you get the right attitude, and you're willing to build the future worker that you need. That's great. And it sounds like you've done okay despite the challenging environment. Sean, I was wondering, do you feel with having in one of the first nine, I don't know if you have a t-shirt or a title for the first nine when you started the company. So growing up to 150-ish, How much has your being employee owned made a difference? Do you think it's been a hiring advantage as you, I know it's only been, you said around 4 years since the ownership, but I ask this because employee owned ownership culture doesn't just show up when you sell to your workers. The one, the ESOPs that make it, that is foundational, you know, culture. And then the owner decides to sell to that kind of the workers and their behavior. So in the broader sense, how much do you think the ownership has been an advantage for Alliance?
I don't know so much if, you know, us, I think saying that it's for an ESOP that's drawing them to them. I think it's the fact that it's the culture that we're trying to sell. Like Matt was just talking about, we're looking for the right person, not necessarily the right skilled person. But I think they just, as an ESOP, we have a deeper care in what we're looking for from somebody that's coming on. And I think selling that culture that we want, that we have here, I think probably is related directly hand in hand with the ESOP.
That's great. So a question for both of you, maybe we can start, Matt, with you. Is leadership different? Is being a leader at an employee-owned company different than being at a publicly traded or non-employee-owned? Do you feel that there's a difference?
Not necessarily at Alliance, yeah. Because as Brandon alluded to earlier, I was a member of the management team before we went to ESOP Bouts with Sean, and not a lot changed from before and after because Jason, who's our director now, was the owner. He always treated us like under owner. He asked for input. He knew he couldn't do it on his own, and he always invited us to engage and be part of it and almost had that culture already. So within Alliance, it's been like that. But in the other companies I've worked for, I've seen being different from one.
Sean, do you have any thoughts you want to add?
I don't think I can agree anymore. So we have managers. A group of managers, and we get together once a month. And Jason started that, bring everybody in. Let's talk about issues. How can we be better? You know, that question is only asked, how can we be better? That's a question we ask. We ask everybody, what's important to you? How can we make your tenure here at Alliance better? If you're another analogy from our training, if you're coming to work and you're at an 8 out of 10, what would it take to make you a 9 out of 10? What would make that tick up a little bit more? And I think we've been like that, really. I've been like that, I would say, from day one, really. ESOP just emphasized.
That's great. Yeah, in employee ownership advocacy, the podcast and conferences, talking to all different sized and maturity levels of ESOPs across the country, it's very interesting to see how, where you have, you're fairly new to it on the four-year side, but you've talked, I think, to me, at least my experience with just meeting you, is that you're talking more about sort of foundational roots, foundational values, the early owner, and that doesn't sound like for you that's really changed. You've added ownership to it, but you're driven by those foundational values. And so it's very interesting when you look at some of the more mature ESOPs that are 25 years into it, to see those traces of those foundational values and often endure. They're enriched by new experiences, new voices, but it's very interesting to hear that, where it doesn't sound like there's a real clear line. Do you remember the day that you became owners, or do you remember the month or the year? I'm just curious.
I remember the meeting, not the exact day we were meeting.
Jason pulled all the managers up to Essex along with the office staff in Essex and brought them all out to the shop, which is now part of the office. It got remodeled. Yeah. We built a new shop, but it was the old shop, the old tin shop. And basically told us about it. It was, hey, this is, yeah, congratulations, your owners.
That's great. What was the reaction in the room?
At first it was just dead silence.
There was no, and then there was applause.
Then there was applause.
There was applause, and there was a little bit of shock at first. And once that shock was like over, then it was like, wow, this is a good thing. And then everyone started, cheering, clapping. Yeah. But then it quickly shifted back to the, okay, what does this mean? What is ESOP?
Yeah.
At that time, was surprised, excited, then curious.
That's great. I'm just smiling. It's probably coming through to listeners in my voice because I've heard very similar stories where there was like, everyone's kind of nervous. Like, why are we getting pulled together? Did we get sold? And then, yay, I've been close to this for a while and I just sold you the company, and there's this yay launch, and then there's just a little silence when people are trying to process, and then sort of the slow, awkward clap. I think I'm supposed to be clapping. And then like an hour later, there's a bit of adrenaline and euphoria, and massive buckets of curiosity. What does this really mean? But that's really, I appreciate you sharing that tender moment, but it sounds like it didn't take folks very long to get on the bus and realize that it was going to be a new path and adventure for Alliance. A couple more questions in our time. So this is a question that a friend of mine, Gabriel Luke, had suggested. Just to acknowledge the time that we're in global history. This is an unprecedented time. People are tired. People are weary. As I start meetings like that, listen, this is a unique time in history. We're all tired. A lot of people are sensitive and distracted. If there are a couple outliers that are thriving, if they are among us, they are not the norm. They're the outlier. Let's come together, bring the best we can. This is what we're here for today. Let's get some work done. Sort of that idea to try to acknowledge. There's no, doesn't seem to be any cultural vernacular effort to recognize people's experience through COVID. So being that you have a high pressure, your leaders and your company literally keeps the company, other companies going. You keep our company going when something goes wrong. In these challenging times, what keeps you coming back? Can you share, Matt, to start? What keeps you coming back through those, this endurance contest with COVID? What keeps you coming back?
Work?
Yeah.
So I've always wanted to just build something. And I feel like what Jason has allowed us to do is build something. And from day one, when I started here, we only had three of us down out of our branch in Lebanon. And I always wanted to say, I always said, I want to make us bigger than what we have up in Essex. I want to grow something. And then given the opportunity that Jason has given us to, in these roles, to grow this, and pretty much there's no restriction. We want to make this thing as big as we want to, we can. He's pretty much given us the keys to the car and say, drive it. So I keep coming back because I'm wanting to build something great. And having the opportunity to do that is what brings me back.
That's great. Thank you. What about for you, Sean? What keeps you coming back in these times?
Oh, for me, obviously we all work for sustainability, but besides paycheck. No, I truly care about the people that I work with. And it does, it's a constant challenge. And I think we like challenge. And everybody wants to be challenged. So every day you're coming back and I don't want to let my fellow employees down. So my responsibility is to make sure that they have work for the next day. On the other hand, I don't want to let our customers down either. I don't want to come in constantly. Right now we're in a situation where, oh my gosh, how are we going to get all this done? So for me, it's the constant challenge of coming in and just trying to see how we can get it all done.
That's great. Thank you.
You referenced COVID in there, and we here at our office, we didn't shut down or stop. The challenge then was we're finding work, and we were able to keep every single one of our employees working every day throughout the pandemic without having to, in our department in service, without having to lay off anyone. There were some days where we had to be really creative and come up with things, and we accepted it as a challenge.
That's great. Yeah, you were very successful through it. I'm aware of that. And I was on site every day with our essential workers supporting them. And it was interesting through that kind of that mountain crest of what is going on? How do I make sense of this? I don't feel safe. And then things started to get in the groove. And what I saw, and I asked people directly, so this isn't just an opinion, but after a while, it was actually being together that started to make it less nerve-wracking for the total experience. And it took a while, but the teasing, the knuckle busting, some of the loud music, that did return. And to see what the on-site essentials had for community versus folks that were told you need to work remote so we can keep the production humming and keep the building occupancy down. I'm not sure the remote experience was really appreciated. Without that community, without that camaraderie, some folks seem to have changed a little bit. And for a lot of the daily workers, like you guys, like us, like the other companies that were able to pull that off, it does seem like those folks have bounced back a little bit quicker and a little bit stronger because of their community experience. But congratulations, businesses are getting decimated with staffing and layoffs, that you didn't lose anybody and you're rolling strong. So rolling into our last question, I want to give you the opportunity. First, I want to say, is there anything about Alliance or your ownership experience that we didn't get to that you want to share? And then I want to give you a chance to assertively, as owners, promote Alliance as a great employer so that you can speak directly to people who've heard this podcast, who think, I might see myself there. So first, anything you wanted to talk about Alliance or ownership that we didn't get to?
I think we touched on it pretty good.
Good. Yeah, you've been very eloquent teachers about ownership culture and experience. Let's say, Matt, first, the floor is yours. Why should somebody work at Alliance Group? Talk directly to them. No holds barred. Go for it.
Because we're an ESOP, right? I mean, that, no, several factors. We are, a quick story. When I was sitting down and interviewing with Sean and JP at the time to come to Alliance, I had two boys at the time. And Sean was telling me how he coached sports. And working in this industry, you're on call all the time. You're always having to go work and fix stuff that breaks, right? Because nothing's on schedule. So the fact that knowing, hey, I could come to this company and be able to commit to the coaching, like sports for my kids, was huge. It's the closest thing to a 9-to-5 HVAC company that you'll get. Family is put first. It really is. I know people say that, but it really is. It's just, we value the employee. We do have a lot of work. Yes, we have a lot of customers. We have a lot going on. But the number one goal, and it's so funny you say, Jason was down here yesterday and he said that we can never lose sight. That while our two things that we value the most are our employee and our customer. And that's why Alliance is a great company. Because they really understand it. And everyone like Sean and myself and Jason, we were all workers. We were all HVAC technicians. We know what it's like to go out there and be on a roof when it's 10 below, working on a rooftop unit that's got no heat. You're trying to get the customer inside heat. So we show empathy for the guys. We understand that. So it's not like you're working for a company where you're just talking to a bunch of people that sit in the office. I was on vacation last week. Monday was my first day back and we had a little bit of a dilemma. So I was out in the field all day working on rebuilding a boiler. It's just, we can do that. And the people here that work for us know that when you know what hits the fan, they can call us. And we are there to help with whatever they need. So that's truly what I think sets it apart.
That's great. That's great. You hear the pride coming through, and you are clearly an owner of your company. And it comes through with the pride and the clarity. So I appreciate your opening up to that. And what about for you, Sean?
It's the same thing. It's our culture. I think our culture sets us apart from anyone else. Obviously, we're skilled workers and working for everybody. But here we have a team that truly does care about one another, and you can feel that in the culture. There's no negativity towards one another. There's more of a helping hand towards one another. And some of the things that we do that have been started as a Friday shout out. On Friday, people send out a shout out, hey, I just want to recognize this person, and it goes out to all users. I want to recognize this person for doing this, and they were there for me, they helped me out. We see that we have a what's called an own it, you know. All the time where we have outside resources coming in and asking us, hey, donate to this charity. We're like, you know what? We have those problems in-house. So we came up with what it's called the Own It Fund, Owners with Needs, and we raise money and randomly donate that money to this person that was brought to our attention that needs, that could use a little bit of help. And a lot of times that person's, they don't know and they're taken back, and people jump on this stuff. And a lot of times it's a 50-50. We raffled off a Red Sox jersey. 50% of the money was going to go to the Own It Fund, and the other half was going to go to the winner that won, you know, the money or the jersey. And that person turns around and gives that money right back to the owner. So, those are the kind of things that, you know, that we like. We do owner, nominate owner of the quarter. And it all comes from, it's not, everybody says, hey, I think this person deserved to be owner of the quarter. Something that's gone above and beyond. They're there for me. It's not just managers saying this, it's field and office personnel together recognizing, you know, the value in each one, every one of them.
And kind of elaborating on Sean a little bit is giving everyone a voice too. We have other committees that get together. Sean and I seem to be on most of them. We actually reach out. We single certain topics and we reach out to employees, all of them, and we ask for, hey, what do you want to see here? Hey, we might pick like this topic this month or this topic next month and put out, hey, bring us your ideas. What do you need? What did we do? We just implemented paternity leave that was brought to us by one of these suggestions. What are some things that you think would make Alliance better? Somebody had paternity leave. We did that out, a CEO structure. There's several things that we don't think about because we're so busy doing other things.
Yeah.
So we just said, well, you know what? We have 150 people. I'm sure there's more than just the 15 of us in the managers group that have a good idea. Let's ask everybody. That's what we started doing. We got some great ideas and we've implemented several of them.
That's great. Yeah. If given the opportunity, I say that the single beyond care, beyond trust, the single visible, audible, measurable, profitable ownership behavior is continuous improvement. My voice matters. There's a place and a way to share my idea and have it heard, whether it gets used or not, then I feel validated. But if it helps make the company better, it helps with employee retention. What's better than crowdsourcing 150 for your 12-person management team or whatever the number is? It's great. So it's great to hear those examples and hear your energy when you talk about that. So I know you have teams to lead and potentially boilers to build or roofs to jump on and fill in for missing teammates. So I want to be respectful of your time. It's been great to spend this hour. It's been great to meet you today for this conversation. So really appreciate what you're doing. And I appreciate your sharing your ownership experience and sharing a bit about Alliance Group, very successful ESOP on the rise. So I want to thank our listeners. Brandon had to go. I want to thank our guests, John and Matt. Guys, really appreciate it. And again, this is Jesse Tyler for the Owner to Owner podcast on the EO Podcast Network. Thanks for listening.
We'd love to hear from you. You can find us on Facebook at EO Podcast Network and on Twitter at ESOP Podcast. This podcast has been produced by Brett Kiesling for the EO Podcast Network. Original music composed by Max Kiesling. Branding and marketing by Bitsy Plus Design. And I'm Bitsy McCann.